star Michael Hoffman says Hitler didn't give enough winter supplies, so the poor German soldiers were freezing to death.
Yeah, that's
Hitler's negligence.
Oh, he says the same thing. He says the same thing, more or less. Then, right?
Oh, yeah, they probably all say that. That's a popular one.
He's got a new book called Adolf Hitler, Enemy of the German People, Michael Hoffman.
Yeah, right.
Well, we roasted him with two videos with seven of us. We roasted him a few months ago.
Right.
Right. Well, then, so.
Has any one of you read that book, Hoffman's book? Have you read it?
No.
Joe Rizzoli did. He was commenting on the video. He's read it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, I don't read. I won't read that stuff. You know, I won't read it. I don't see why. I'm not going to spend my time reading things that are really repulsive to me, that in order to argue their false points with them. You know, I don't waste my time doing that. I'm not going to spend my time doing
me neither.
But this is the Moscow story. And then Hitler put forth his plan to go do this attack in the south. And I think that might have been when he moved Manstein down there, because Manstein was in the north, as what he thought would be was his best general to do that. And he had great success in winning this big battle. What was it called? Oh, I can't remember names of anything. But
yeah, the Romanian oil fields, that was very vital.
Well, right? They weren't able to take those oil fields. They never managed to do that. But they were down there, took something else, and won a huge battle down there that gave them very good position to continue on. But like everything, but you know, he ran into trouble in Leningrad because of betrayal, because of and this in the military, in his military, they were already conspiring to pass on information to the Soviet Union, military information, top generals who were in this, already in these anti-Hitler assassination plots. They weren't planning an assassination at that moment. But why
would they want Germany to lose these generals? Why would they give intel?
There are certain generals there who were so against Hitler's overall policy toward the Jews and toward Poland and toward the East that they thought it was going to be harmful to Germany. Well, they brought it about. In my opinion, their fear, their idea that what Hitler was doing was going to hurt Germany and hurt Germany's standing in the world. It's like allies, you know, with our allies. They were more of the globalist type. They were more of the pan-European type. And this was going to hurt Germany. And we had to stop. With Germany, the only thing they could do is help the enemy and allow the Germans to lose. They did this on the East too, right? Even in the first, before the Barbarossa, in the French War, in the, what's it called? The Battle of France or something like that. They did it then too. And that's, we'll go into that. That's gone into in the book.
So they thought they're helping Germany by losing.
No,
so
we'd have a better reputation. They wanted Germany to lose and lose early. They said, better we lose now, before we lose too many people, before too many people die, and get Hitler, because they really didn't like Hitler. But they didn't. Hitler was so popular with the people. He was, you know, he had become very, very popular and had a, you know, he was not easy. He couldn't just overthrow him. I mean, they could say what they wanted. People didn't believe it. So they couldn't overthrow him because they didn't have any base of support. This was what they came up with, and it wasn't big, you know, but it was key people, and they were passing information about battle plans, and Hitler was scratching his head, poor guy, trying to figure out how this was happening, because he didn't distrust his generals. People could say today he was stupid not to do that. He was gullible, or they say it was because that was his plan. And he wanted Germany to lose.
He was a Zionist communist dude, all the while working for the Jews.
Right, but it wasn't, he had this big idea of the honor of the German military, and he particularly honored the German soldier, but he also honored the officers, and they had an honor code, and they said they were completely honorable, in their ranks, they put that across. And he went, he didn't make the SA, the Military Defense Forces for Germany. He decided to go with the Reichswehr, and it became the Wehrmacht. He decided to go with that.
Almost like Hitler's too good for this world, relying on mere human beings who are faulty and flawed and lie, he's just too good for this world.
Well, yeah, but I think he was just right for the world. I think he did a great job. And when I say that, people just, oh, God, you're such a Hitler cultist. You're just blinded. You're just with your Hitler worship.
Like Pete and Brian. You guys are all the same.
I have studied this a lot, and I really, that's how I see it. He was right. They were wrong, but they didn't want the same thing. They wanted to be friends with their fellow aristocrats all around Europe. That's what these people were. They were the aristocratic ones in the army. They weren't the guys that worked their way up because of their bravery and their talents and so on. And they were never against Hitler. It was always these
they're the ones who did the bombing, right? July 20th, 1944. Hitler said he feared them more than the Jews, the aristocrats within Germany.
Well, he didn't say he feared them. I don't think he said he feared them. He said
he mistrust them, I guess.
That they were more of a problem or something like that. They were, more dangerous. And he admitted to Giesler that he didn't appreciate how dangerous they were. He said at one point, one of his sentences that's so, I think, is memorable. He said, "I forgot I was a revolutionary." He was so identified with the country as it was, and with everything was, establishment. Now he was the establishment. Yeah, he became the establishment, and he thought he was the establishment, but he forgot that he wasn't. And that the establishment was still there wanting to get rid of him, and they did him in. So, Hitler had what you could call weaknesses, that he didn't see everything. He wasn't all seeing. He wasn't, some master, wise person. He had human faults and human failings, but it's amazing. It's amazing how far he got. The explanation they came up with is, well, let's demonize Hitler because we don't want people to like Hitler. We want to make out that everything he was doing was wrong. It was bad. And because people keep looking up to Hitler and liking him, we have to make him look like a traitor. They will make him look like a traitor. To us, it's just ridiculous. But to them, they find a lot of people who are ready to say, oh, that's the answer to it. That's the solution to the puzzle. Yeah, now I see. Oh, it's great to get this information from you.
What do you think of this allegation, Carolyn? It says that Hitler didn't target the Rothschilds when he was bombing the city of London, proving that he was their stooge.
Yeah, well, that's not as funny as the next sentence, but why would he target the Rothschild mansion when they're bombing? And it wasn't Hitler's decision. It was really the Luftwaffe's decision who they were going to target. I mean, Hitler was not micromanaging everything that went on like they wanted say he was. So that just wasn't a worthwhile bombing target. So that is the dumbest thing that anybody could say. But also, it says he didn't bomb the Lancaster airplane factory.
Right. Well,
if he didn't, it was because for reasons. If they didn't bomb that, you know, the planes that they were using, and I read all of Willy Wenger's brother, Leopold Wenger, who was a bomber pilot in that there, a fighter pilot there, and he was on the in that all that bombing campaign against Britain, the Battle of Britain, and everything that he wrote, and you know their planes, they used these the best fighter planes they had, and they turned them into semi. They could carry some bombs, you know. They added that to these fighter planes, so they had some guns to shoot, and they had some bombs they could drop, but they were just you know small compared to. But they could do some bombing, and they went over there in these excursions. But they ran into tons of flak and other kinds of defensive things. And they only had so much gas in them. So they only went, and they had to come back again. So they could only go so far. So I don't know where the Lancaster airplane factory was, but you know it was highly camouflaged and highly defended. So if it wasn't worth it to have your own plane shot down by all the defense around the Lancaster airplane factory, you weren't going to go there. Because they lost fighters as it was in these things, and they didn't have an endless supply like the Russians did. So, you know, all these decisions would be making sense. And you wouldn't say, oh, just because it was that factory that if they didn't bomb it, that it was because they didn't want to win the war.
It's easy to say Hitler is a Zionist shill. You pick any little detail like that, oh, he's a Zionist shill, without looking into all the practical details. Really appreciate your knowledge on this, Carolyn. I never knew this stuff.
Oh, good. Well, I hope I'm getting across.
Okay, how about this one? Yeah. And this is, I don't know, even to me it sounds a little silly, but you would know better, that he could have won the war if he captured Gibraltar, thereby keeping the British out of the Mediterranean.
Yeah, well, you know, Franco had something to say about that.
Why would Franco have a problem with that, though?
I mean, don't know. See, but he did. So he did. Couldn't do it without Franco's cooperation. And Franco wouldn't do it. And after Hitler himself had saved, had done so much for Franco in the Spanish Civil War, and helped him defeat those
communists. Yeah.
Well, I think the theory of Franco is that he was working for the Rothschilds, or Rothschilds made a deal, or he promised the Rothschilds, so the Rothschilds made a deal not to support Hitler in the war.
Well, I don't know if that's it. I think Hitler thought Franco was a coward. I mean, not a coward.
Very difficult.
He didn't think he was the greatest man. He didn't think he held a candle to Mussolini. Oh, and you know, and look at that. So, but you know, he said he didn't have any. He went the last time it was before Mussolini did his dumb thing by attacking Greece, which was a big failure. Right before that, Hitler had been to see Franco, and he stopped in a restaurant in Munich on the way to Italy and had a meal with Giesler. And he told Giesler, according to Giesler, that he was so disappointed in Franco. He went to see Franco to try to talk him into some of these things, and Franco would not, you know, budge, I guess. And he said Franco is just an ordinary person. He has no personality. Hitler believed a lot in personality, strong personality. And he said he was so disgusted from that meeting. He never wants to see Franco again. He said, I'd rather have all my teeth pulled than go than go talk to Franco again. And because Franco just, I think he didn't want to do anything to hurt Spain. He thought, you know, he just wanted to play the neutral game and stay safe, because he had gotten power in Spain and he didn't want to lose it or, you know, venture anything further. He just wanted to hold fast. So that's what I would say, but maybe whether he had a deal with the Rothschilds. I don't know.
I don't know if that's true. I just read that, but who knows?
Yeah, but see,
that could be a lie.
Yeah, I just, so many things we read. I try not to say, well, I read this somewhere, but at least say where I read it and have something more reason to believe it. I think the Rothschilds are thrown in here maybe a little too much. But
the allegation is that Hitler was a Rothschild stooge. So that's why they're always
probably. And you know, that story, let's just get it clear that story that Hitler's grandmother, and I have, I think, one of the very best articles on that on my website. It's the most popular article on my website.
Can you give the audience your website?
With 170 or 80, going on 170 or 180 views of that article, which is a lot for me, for my website, a lot, which covers all that, you know, that all those, both the Rothschild stories, that she never even, his grandmother never even left her village, you know, I mean, she never went to work for anybody.
So it's a total lie. She's never, so your website is carolynyeager.net, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've heard that 136 times, that his grandmother worked for Rothschild Mansion, therefore got impregnated by, so it's a total lie, you're saying.
No, and then there's another story about another Frankenberger, Jew, a Jew named Frankenberger in Vienna, I think, that his grandmother supposedly worked for and got pregnant by him. So it wasn't a Rothschild, but it was the son of a rich Jewish family. And that's not true either, because they proved that she never went there. She never, you know, did much of anything.
So she never left her village. What did she do in her village? What was her job?
You know, she was a quite a respectable person. She inherited her family's farm or property somehow, and she was quite a strong-minded woman, and she never she didn't marry, but she got pregnant when she was in her I think she was already around 40 or maybe not quite or something like that. I have those details in that article. If people go to my site and look on the menu for most popular articles, they'll find that's the first one there. They can just click on it.
You know the name of the article?
It says on there, why Hitler didn't have a Jewish grandmother, and then the rest of it's just dots. Something about, you know.
So you're saying she gave birth to Adolf Hitler's father, right?
Yeah. And she wasn't married. And the priest, because they keep records of everything, you know, and they wanted to know the father's name. And because they wanted to give that name to the child. So he had his father's, because that meant a lot. Of, you know, in those days, you had to have your father's name. You didn't take your mother's name. That was just not right. She wouldn't tell him. She would not tell him. He finally gave up. Oh. They gave up, and they gave the boy her name, Schickelgruber. And this was Alois, or Alois, however you pronounce it, who Hitler's father. And later on, she met, she got into a relationship and married a man named Heitler. It was kind of pronounced in German, the D, it's spelled with the D, but it's kind of pronounced T-like, D's are in German. So Heitler. And they married, and he adopted the boy and gave him his name. And then after, maybe he didn't adopt the boy. I don't know if it was he did or his brother did. I think he did, but, he had a brother, this Heitler, who was married and had children and, you know, had a farm of his own. And, somehow this son, Alois, ended up going and living with his stepfather's brother, who was the real father. It was turned out that some German researchers and historians discovered that. I've got all that in the article. And that he, that's why this brother knew that Alois was his son, because he knew he had had this affair or one night stand or relationship or something.
Wow, with, he was a real father.
With Anne and Schicklgruber.
What if his brother knew that? Did his brother know that, or is this a family secret?
The brother might have known that. The brother probably knew that. But she would not tell on this man because he was married and had a wife and children, you know, and she would not tell on him. But then that worked out this way, and I don't know, I'm sure she knew that the man that her son was going to live with was his real father. She
so that's fair enough. That kind of makes sense. So I guess
yeah, they're all care for each other. And he was getting a little older then, and this man, and it was just Anna Schicklgruber, who was already older when he was born, and this older husband of hers, and this young boy. And they thought, everybody thought it'd be better if he went and lived with his uncle, who had kids, his step uncle, who had kids and a younger family, and his real father as well. Yeah, and his real father as well. So it's a nice story. And then he changed his name, Alois Hitler.
Yeah,
changed his name, or Hitler. They might have pronounced it Hitler. Probably, he changed it to a spelling of Hitler. He's the one who did that.
So Hitler's father himself changed his name.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad he
changed his name to Hitler.
Hitler's not a Hitler.
Yeah. Yeah, Hitler said he was glad he did. He said that he was happy with that name. He was satisfied.
I don't feel comfortable saying Heil Hitler. Heil Hitler. This doesn't cut it for me.
So there's no Rothschilds involved there, and no Jews or anything.
Okay. Here's probably one of the most popular myths, and maybe you understand the nuances of this. The Hitler and National Socialism came to power and was funded by Wall Street, Max Warburg, Prescott Bush, and other nefarious globalists through IG Farben.
Yeah, that's the... Sutton, E.F. or E.G. Sutton,
Anthony Sutton,
yeah.
That's right.
That's very highly, widely believed, very, very widely believed. And I did a real good radio program, I think, way back when, on Prescott Bush and that whole theme. Mm-hmm. And I debunked that. I think I did a good job. But I haven't listened to the whole thing in a long, long time. So maybe I'll do that when I get around to it. But,
I had read a book about that, because this was a major issue that I remember I was trying to resolve when I was still with American Free Press back in the days when Mike Piper was still there. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Mike about this, and he gave me a book to read, which I read part of, Who Funded Hitler?
Yeah,
written by Pools. Somebody. Pools.
Yeah.
Pools, exactly. That one. And that said that almost all of their funding came from small donations, from grassroots.
That's right.
Supporters.
And also these big industrialists, because Hitler opposed the communists, and they didn't want the communists. So they figured that the best they could do, they couldn't get maybe somebody more establishment in, because Hitler was really popular then and running away with the votes. So they decided to go with Hitler, and they sent him, became big financial supporters, plus all the small donations, which were substantial. I don't know which was greater. Mm-hmm. But, and then the Pools, Pete, they said that. That's what they wrote in their book, and that's their conclusion. And yet these people who want to push the other theory, even recommend the Pools book. Somebody did that just recently. And as the same as the Sutton theory. They want to say, because they mention all these things, you know, in the book and talk about them, they say, oh, well, you know, they say that too. But that's not their final conclusion.
Well, I'd like to go through Anthony Sutton's book and itemize the different, because I guess he's supposed to be a pretty respectable researcher.
A lot of them are.
A lot of other things. Right. So he, you know, a lot of times these guys have alleged proof that, you know, this money was transferred from this Wall Street firm to IG Farben on so-and-so date. And that might be true, but maybe it's taken out of context. It doesn't mean it was just because these companies had international financing. They were huge conglomerates. That doesn't mean that this money was given directly to Hitler, so that and meaning that he was beholden to these bankers. So I think sometimes part of this might be true, but maybe taken out of context in ways that I can't explain because I don't have enough knowledge.
Well, look, you know, there was a sleight of hand involved in the Schroeder Bank, the Schroeder family. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that name? There's a Schroeder. I don't have it. I believe it's in one of my podcasts. So there's a Schroeder. There was two Schroeders, and this Anthony Sutton, I think it's him. At least some of them, others are those who push the Bush, Prescott Bush was funded the Nazis and crap like that, you know.
Alan Dulles, also the Dulles.
Yeah, Dulles. But there's that guy who's a big World Trade Center. He wrote several books about the World Trade Center. He's a conspiracy theorist. I can't think of his name. But he went into this a lot, but I'm sure that he cites Anthony Sutton a lot.
Sutton being honest, or was he trying to be misleading, you think, Anthony Sutton?
I think he's just trying to write a book that sells well and makes a big reputation for
him. Because he didn't want to say the truth at that time, but what Hitler looked like in the 70s.
They write what's a good story. You know, even David Irving does plenty of that, wants to make a good story over and above the actual honest facts of the matter. So, but there's these Schroeder, like there was two Schroeder banks, and there was this Schroeder family in Germany, and then there was a Schroeder family that went to Britain from Germany, but they weren't really the same. They were so far removed. I mean, they weren't really the same family. But the one was in Britain and doing things, and the other was loyal in Germany and working well with, with Hitler and his National Socialists and whatever way that would have been. And they have been conflated to make one seem like one was doing what the other was doing. And I came upon that and I wrote about it. And I could find it as a topic in one of my podcasts. You know, I've been recommending some of these podcasts recently because of this thread I've been commenting on. It goes into all this stuff. And I look back at these very early Heretics Hour programs I did in the first year or two, and they were some of the best. I'm telling you, I'm impressed. It's like,
what year was that, those podcasts?
2010 and 2011. 2010 was a banner year. I mean, everything I'm looking at, it says 2010. I thought, man, I was putting out the stuff in 2010. I don't know how I had so much energy. I was turned on. Some of my best stuff is from 2010.
So can people find that on carolynyeager.net?
Yes. Yeah. You just have to go back. Go through the Heretics Hour. Go to the last one and then go back from the end to the front. But there's no way to just say there. I don't have any listing of all my podcasts. That would be a lot to do. And then you just link, you know, click on it and go to it or something. But I put a lot in podcasts then. And I had my notes, and I kept them. Now I've gotten rid of a lot of notes, but I think some of them, a lot of them, I still have all the notes that I worked from. But it gets to be overwhelming, you know, to keep up with everything like that, keep up with the past. I'd probably be better off if I spent my time updating my website and making sure everything was working right and doing things with that from the past work I've done.
Yeah, you want continuing to do,
new work, you know. I don't know. I think I would be, but I keep wanting to do new things. Anyway, so I don't know if I answered that, but I think that's all hooey. And it's in, a lot of it is in that one podcast called, well, there's two of them. And one of them has an image of a real colorful Star of David with a swastika around it or something. And the other one has one of those American flags with, instead of the stars is a swastika. That's when I think of them, I see those images because that's the image I have with the podcast, but I can't remember the names of them.
You know, Hitler's, one of Hitler's finance ministers was this guy named what? Helmar Schacht?
Schacht,
yeah. And he was, I think, the only guy that was actually exonerated at the Nuremberg trials, I think.
He wasn't, let's see, no. Well, fully exonerated, it could be that you could be right about that, yeah.
Yeah, but in any case, a lot of people claim that he was, you know, because he was, you know, he was a banker, and before him, I think Hitler had, what was that other guy's name, his original, anyway, but he was more into like the whole barter currency kind of a thing in the beginning, in order to break away from the Rothschilds completely. But supposedly under Schacht, he you know, started receiving loans from the Rothschilds through maybe Max Warburg or something. But they claim that he went by a different name, that he got this money, but he didn't know that it was coming from Warburg. But nevertheless, they inadvertently were funding Hitler. I don't know why at this point, if Hitler was already supposed to be the big enemy.
Well,
I don't know why.
How much were they funding? How much money came from Warburg?
I have no idea.
Well, you know, that's important.
I've read things.
You know,
it seems significant.
How much we're talking about.
I think they were talking about significant sums.
But a lot of it would be to keep the war going longer because they want more white Christians killing white
Warburg,
Christians.
Well, right? Warburg was not necessarily an enemy of Hitler, and he was not an enemy of the Third Reich in the beginning. He was one of those who wanted to keep his domain going and felt he could cooperate and get along with Hitler. You know, and continue to be a powerful force in Germany and so on. I don't think that all Jews were all united there with the Zionists. A lot of these Jews, like Warburg, didn't like them. Didn't like what they were doing and weren't on their team.
Well, so, the Warburgs, you know, they seemed
and to- they identified as Germans. Some of these Jews, that rich Jews who had been there. While they wanted to be Germans, they did. They didn't want to be some rabscabble Jew trying to go to Palestine. You know, that didn't turn them on at all. They felt they were part of the German high, not just aristocracy, but, you know, wealthy class and respectable people. And they wanted to remain a part of that. A lot of people right up to the end, Jews who were considered themselves Germans and wanted to be Germans. They knew they were Jewish and they didn't want to, you know, hurt their fellow Jews, but I imagine they didn't, but they really identified with Germany, and understandably they loved being German. They loved Germany. They didn't want to be Zionists.
But the Warburg specifically, they're supposed to be like a top tier Rothschild family.
Well, that, you know,
you know,
I don't
Paul
know.
Warburg was...
I don't follow all that. I used to read conspiracy theory books. You know, I mean, there's a one of the first books I ever had was the conspiracy. What was it called? Something about world, the conspiracy theory of world history. It's the conspiracy view of world history, all from the conspiracy angle. And it was written by one of these big, well-known conspiracy guys from early on, early in the movement, kind of what I call the movement. I don't know what to call it, but early on. It would have been very popular with Barnes Review readers and so on. I never read that whole book, but that was the idea I had. That was my introduction, and I read all kinds of things like that. But I have somewhat pulled away from that because it doesn't explain things from the point of view of real people.
But I think Pete's right about Max and Paul Warburg and the Federal Reserve. Paul Warburg was in New York and Max was in Germany. They're Rothschild agents, so right at the top, I think they're definitely working with Rothschild motives.
Also financing the Bolshevik Revolution. Max Warburg was one of the main people involved in that, apparently. But I don't think it was specifically.
Well, they were bankers. They were financing everything. So they were willing to finance Hitler. They're willing to finance the communists. They're willing to finance it. That doesn't necessarily mean that they had a plan. They were part of a plan to do certain things, or they were on one side, or I think they were on their own side. And they worked with fellow Jews. Rothschilds were big, rich bankers. So,
I think they had a motive to keep the war going.
One thing problem I had with that is that we end up getting an enemy that we can't possibly reach or touch or do anything about. It's like, oh, there's the enemy. And I think this is the motive of a lot of these people who push this stuff. Like even idiot jerkness and so on. They don't want to solve this problem, for anybody. I don't know what they want, but they want to point to people, to things that you can't do anything about, you can't fix. How are you going to fix it? And it's so big that you can't reach it, and it's hopeless, and it takes away from real activism or people doing things they can manage to do on the level they're at, like you do, Brian. You do a lot.
Yeah, I just want to know the truth. Just tell the truth. I think Mike King's The Bad War, he said the British went into Greece in 1943 and then they pulled back because they did not want to defeat Hitler too early. They want to keep white Christians killing white Christians. So what's not to like about white people killing white people, right? So then why invade Normandy? It's much more
that's
difficult.
Dumb.
What do you think King was wrong about that?
Yes. I wouldn't agree with that. I wouldn't agree that the idea of the British was to kill white people, as many white people as possible.
Mike King says that they pulled out of Greece at what time?
1943.
But they didn't have a choice because Hitler invaded Greece and then the Italians were there also managing the place. So they wouldn't have been that easy. I mean, the Italians initially came in there to supposedly help the Greeks when the British came in there when the Italians tried to invade, mm-hmm. and they used that as an excuse. But then when Hitler came in to finish the job, I think the British were just routed out.
Maybe so.
It wasn't out of their own choice that they left. They just left because they were kicked out.
King, I agree. King says it differently, though, the way he describes in The Bad War.
Yeah, but my King is not an expert. So he's written some good books with good stuff in them and some not so good stuff. And this is the problem with just accepting everything from somebody or from a particular
book. Yeah, nobody knows it all.
Do you know Mike King well? I don't know him at all.
I've had him on my show a few times back in 2017.
There are people and things that I can read and get into, and then there's some that I try but I can't do it. I think it's an affinity kind of thing. It's not it's I think you have an affinity for things that are like unto yourself more, and not with things that are not. I have an affinity with you guys. Well, that's because you're so easy to talk to and agreeable.
Most of the time, you know. Well, people like most nice about us is our unbridled modesty. That's the best thing about us.
Okay, how about this? How about the transfer agreement?
If the transfer agreement is proof that Hitler was a Zionist stooge because he helped send the Jews to Palestine.
Right, right, right.
Well, isn't that dumb? Well, maybe you wrote it dumb, Pete. Maybe it's not as dumb as what you wrote here, but
well, basically... kind of purposely wrote it a little bit dumb sounding, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they turn Hitler. Okay, here you go. You know, I mean, Hitler didn't have any intention to exterminate Jews. He had this problem. They had agreed. Before they got into power, they were talking about, you know, what the problem of the Jews for in Germany and how, you know, they had to change that around. So he starts out, he's making what are those laws? The Nuremberg law, what are called the Nuremberg laws, you know, slowly, taking away certain powers from Jews. Well, then he wants to encourage Jews to leave. So he does the most generous program there is, you know. He lets him leave with a large amount of their money, not just their personal property or goods or whatever that they get, but a large amount of their money out of the banks, even not all of it, if they have a huge amount, or some of it was in the gold, you know, Germany's gold reserves and stuff. And there are certain things that, but they could go very, you know, very well. And he developed programs, training programs for Jews to train before they ever left about, you know, how to get by in Palestine, farming and different skills and trades and things. He did all this, you know, and the Nazi National Socialist Party was all working with him, you know, and working with this and helping him go. Because he thought that was a solution, but then he realized when enough of them got there, and it wasn't that many, but enough of them got there, that they weren't keeping their end of the bargain by getting along with the Palestinians and sharing and, you know, sharing alike. And no, they were just, they were just grabbing and taking taking away from the Palestinians, making life hard for the Palestinians.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. So he said, well, he was really friends with the Arabs at that time, and he wanted to keep the friendship of the Arab countries because he had all the world against him. So, you know, he says, well, we can't do this. So we have to stop this and come up with a different solution. But that was what that was all about. So then they want to make out that that's just he was doing that because he was trying to help the Zionist cause. He wasn't, you know, I mean, he wasn't, I don't think he was against the Zionist cause.
I think he just wanted to get them out of Germany.
Yeah.
At what point did he want to send them to Madagascar?
Well, I think that was after they decided they couldn't send any more to Palestine.
Oh,
so then they came up with the plan. I believe that was the next place that they had in mind because, I think they did, they decided on Madagascar after the victory in France, because wasn't it a French piece of property of some kind? And once they got, you know, they beat France, then they had access, they thought, to that.
So France had a colony in Madagascar?
Yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, that makes
Madagascar
sense.
Is some kind of colony.
So the transfer agreement was throughout the 30s then, before the war even started, is that right?
Yes, right in 33 it began.
Yeah, and I don't know when it ended. I don't know when they stopped, when that, I'd have to look that up.
So the Madagascar thing, the attempt to send them there, was obvious, I guess, before the concentration camps opened up, because that wasn't until...
Well, the concentration camps, no, the first concentration camp, Dachau, opened like around in 1933 or 34 or something, and Himmler did it, and it was it was for, it was like a prison, you know, open, an open camp type prison. It was for criminals and he also put political enemies in there.
Like communists, right?
Yeah, so that was starting in 33, and he, you know, he was in office and he had all this trouble from the communists. And so he put some of them in there, but you know, they were well treated. He made sure, or they made sure that particularly the higher up leaders, communist leaders, they had nice little houses or places of their own, and they got fed well and they didn't have to work and all this stuff. You know, they just wanted to keep them out of society because they were causing all kinds of trouble. That's what it was for. It was to get rid of people that were causing trouble.
I guess I must have been thinking about places like Auschwitz that were established after the war started.
Yes, right. Poland, obviously, yeah.
Poland, of course.
Yeah.
So what? So why did the Madagascar experiment not work out?
Well, I think the war got too complex. I don't really know. I can't say that offhand. I can't say offhand what happened there. They just never got going with it. You know, because I don't know what happened in the interim there about the Jews. They just kept passing these laws, you know, restricting Jewish rights and privileges. And I don't know what the Jews were doing then. I really don't. For a couple of years there or so.
I think 2/3 of them did leave Germany.
Two-thirds?
I think 2/3 prior to the war had already left Germany.
You think so?
From 1933.
That's a high amount. Well, they were leaving, but I don't know how many managed to leave. But of course, they were unhappy, you know, because of these Nuremberg laws. And that was the idea. Make them uncomfortable, you know, make them want to leave, to get rid of them. So I love talking about those Nuremberg laws. I know people think they're terrible, but I think they're just great.
Yeah, me too. Of course, the problem with the Jews leaving, they just get together in America, in New York City, and they plot the destruction of Germany from there.
That's right.
Don't you think
that's
at some point that the getting the Jews to go there, because who would want to go and work hard and in the desert and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
So maybe, if nothing else, would you say that Hitler kind of served that the fact that he did the turn against the Jews, that was beneficial to the plan of getting them to go to Palestine, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Zionists wanted the Jews to be mistreated, so that they didn't want them to be happy. They didn't want people like the German guy.
Can't Warburg. Think of what
he said. Warburgs. You know, they wanted to push as many Jews as possible to go to Palestine and form their, you know, their Jewish kingdom down there. So, but most of them didn't want to go. So that was the problem. So yes, of course it worked out that by Germany saying, we don't want you here, but you know, they are very harmful to Germany. And Hitler was noticing, and his whole party was noticing, that the more they got rid of Jews, and particularly got Jews out of these powerful positions, you know, that they had been in, the better things were going for
so
them
true,
and the Germans.
Eh?
You know?
It was ideal by 1939, wow. Greatest country in the world, eh?
Right. You know, and so they knew they were doing the right thing, but they couldn't control, unless he really saw himself as being able to become a world dictator and control the whole world, they couldn't control where these Jews were going and how they were operating from there. But they had the idea if they could get them out of Germany, they could unite and they could protect themselves. You know, they knew enough, they were smart enough, and they could defend themselves.
But don't you think that's a mistake looking back? If you kept the Jews in Germany, toppled them from power, just kept them working on a farm or something, they wouldn't be outside of Germany causing the destruction of Germany.